Welcome to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity. I'm Justine Toe.
And I'm Simon Smart.
Well, we all know that in the world of professional sport, competition is brutal and athletes are looking for anything that can give them even a slight edge over their opponent because, of course, the difference between winning and losing may come down to a few hundredths of a second. So when a sports scientist or a club doctor offers something to athletes that they say will make them just that little bit faster or maybe stronger or just give them an edge over the competition, the temptation must be great. So today on Life and Faith, we are talking about drugs in sport and thinking about the kinds of issues like, you know, why are drugs so tempting for the modern athlete? And does this issue reflect something deeper and more foundational to Western culture today? And then lastly, you know, what about our thinking on ethics? How does it equip us or ill-equip us to deal with this issue? But first, let's get some thoughts from people on the streets of Sydney.
I guess you could say it's not in the spirit of the game, but I guess the concept then is how far can you go? Like, how far will somebody mutilate their body to be successful?
No, not a chance.
Why not?
Because everyone should be on a level playing field. They should be able to use what they've been given.
No, I don't. I think it should be kept natural. Otherwise, where does it end or where does it stop? I think the simplest way is to have zero tolerance for it.
So Simon, the issue of drugs in sport has been around for a while, but all of us were struck by the revelations that Lance Armstrong had actually been doping for a number of years, and not only doping, but lying about it, and this huge systematic cover-up. This was a really shocking story for the sporting world, wasn't it?
It really was. Lance Armstrong is an absolute superstar of not just cycling, but the sporting world. He's a hero of seven, you know, this is unbelievable, seven Tour de France wins in a row. He'd been a survivor of cancer. It gave a whole another sort of element to his story. He had this cancer foundation, which generated lots of income for research into cancer. He was he's a rock star of the sporting world. And there were these stories around that used to circulate around him about drugs and rumours and so on, but he was just so vehement in his denial of it. And so people who were really loyal to Lance were really loyal. And you know, couldn't believe that he could have, you know, dabbled in this sort of stuff. And so to hear that he was so entrenched in it was quite shattering to the supporters of the sport.
Yeah, I mean, he was, as you say, like he was the feel-good story. You know, he had risen above all these, you know, seemingly unconquerable odds to become the superstar. And yet, you know, it was all fake.
Oh,
really.
Yeah. Absolutely. And there's so much drama around this race. It captures lots of people, the Tour de France and the climbs and the way he used to tackle this. He was a great hero of the mountain climb, especially. Incredible endurance, superhuman feats, and it was superhuman, it turns out.
Yeah. Now, in our country, there's this big deal being made of a crime commission report into Australian sport, and the findings promise to blow the whole drugs in sport issue wide open. Now, there are ongoing investigations at the moment, but the authors of the report say that there are plenty of reasons to be concerned.
Especially in one of my favourite sports, in the rugby league, in other forms of the football codes, there are stories now that there are real problems and that they're eventually going to come out. It's a whole lot of court cases and, you know, ongoing investigations and that sort of thing. It's pretty disturbing. Australians used to hear stories of Eastern Bloc, you know, athletes and maybe Chinese athletes doping, and we'd get very, you know, up on our high horse and, you know, be happy to sort of point the finger. We weren't as good when the occasional story would come up of an Australian athlete. We'd tend to say things like, "Oh, maybe the sample was contaminated," or they had their drink spiked, that sort of stuff.
Yeah, it is understandable, I guess, because a sport is so central to Australian identity. We don't want to think that it is enhanced or, yeah. That,
no, we don't. No. And, you know, and I take my little kids who are into it. They love it. They've got that sort of lovely innocence about this. They're not aware of the brutal nature of competitive sport and how it is so tough for the athletes. There's a kind of nice moment where you're sort of naive about those things and you try to pretend when you're an adult. It's still like the glory days when you're a kid.
Given that you've spoken about this naivety and this willingness to believe that, yeah, these guys are fantastic and they do a great job without enhancing drugs, what's it going to do to you to find out that drugs are actually playing a major role in our sporting contests?
Well, it's yet to be seen, Justine.
Keeping the dream alive.
we'll wait and see. It'd be pretty devastating at one level. And, you know, it's still great. I mean, there might be some issues that they really need to address and need to weed out. And there's lots of story. Once sport became professionalised and, you know, there's a whole lot of things that go with that that are maybe not pure and aren't the ideal. But there's still plenty to love about it. But athletes know these days in professional sport that their bodies are like a commodity. They're part of this big corporate machine. And they have a very narrow window of opportunity for compared to other careers. It's a very short career and you're only one knee injury away from oblivion in these sort of sports. The difference probably that these sorts of products can promise to people is the difference between getting that position in a club or getting that contract, which can set you up for life, getting those endorsements from sponsors and that sort of thing. It's a big stakes game now. And so at that level, it wouldn't be surprising to see this as a real temptation for people who in sports where power and strength and especially endurance is critical in getting that advantage over your opponent.
Sport is based around, or competing sport is based around integrity. It's the fact that the person who won fairly and is based on his ability to do the right things in order to get to that winning position. That means a huge amount of dedication. When you get to the point of where you have to actually start injecting yourself with some sort of substance, you've got an issue straight away. If it involves sticking a needle into yourself, you have a problem.
We also want to talk about utilitarianism today, because I've heard you say that there are other more foundational reasons why this kind of thinking shouldn't actually shock us. You've written about utilitarianism and how this has increasingly dominated our society's understanding of right and wrong, right? Ever since the 19th century, where we had all these European intellectuals saying, how about we leave God out of the equation, but we still want to have a good life, so what sorts of principles can guide us? Can you tell us more about that ethos?
Yeah, and it's certainly not limited, of course, to sport. This is as you say, it's a societal thing where we've gone for what we might call an ethic of utilitarianism. If we think about what that means, it's this idea that we assess our actions on the basis of whether or not they'll lead to more or less happiness.
Well, you mentioned happiness. Isn't that, like, that's not a bad thing? We want to increase happiness and avoid suffering.
We do. It's a natural thing. And to the modern ear, as they hear me say that, I'll say, sure, what's wrong with that? Of course, you assess your actions on that basis. But it's a bit more complicated than that, I want to suggest, in the sense that utilitarianism says, you know, we're trying to judge whether I do something, not because it's right or wrong, but we base it on the potential outcome of the way we act. Now, that leads to this sort of ends justify the means mentality, which I suggest is problematic. So that, you know, you might have a test of more or less happiness, but you might realize that it's very hard to predict what that might be. You might realize that in human relationships and so on, we're often not very good at predicting what the impact of my behavior will have on other people around me. So that's one of its limitations, quite apart from the fact that we might want to say, as we once said, that some things are simply good or bad in and of themselves, and that we act on that basis. We say we're going to act with integrity. This is the right thing to do, regardless of whatever I might be able to predict is the outcome of the action.
It strikes me as you're talking that we can think of Robin Hood in some ways in this respect, right? Because the story goes that he's stealing from the rich to give to the poor. So there's like a good outcome, but it doesn't get around the fact that he's stealing in the first place.
Well maybe. I'm probably, who isn't sympathetic to Robin Hood? But it helps me to understand maybe how someone like Lance Armstrong could sleep well at night thinking that, well, I'm bringing joy to millions and millions of people who don't know the inner workings of this system. I'm providing lots of money for the Cancer Foundation, and that's doing a lot of good. So, you know, you can kind of justify a whole lot of things. Now, we boil it down and we've come to understand what was really going on. There aren't many people who still think it's okay that Lance did this, and especially that he lied about it.
Oh, completely. Just the kind of reaction to Lance Armstrong shows that people were saying this is absolutely unacceptable, and the fact that he's completely lied about it as well. You mentioned earlier that utilitarian thinking is not only to be found in sport. Where else do we see it happen in our society?
Well, we see it in lots of places. I think of things like bioethics, where people are working towards a particular goal, and sometimes what dominates that discussion is just the end point. So we're going to get to this point, and it doesn't matter how we get there. And there are a whole lot of complex ethical considerations and sometimes unintended consequences of what people are doing that are part of the equation that people want to disregard because of the end game. But then other people will go, no, the problems with this, there are simply good and bad things and right and wrong things going on here. So that's one area. Another would be things like, I don't know, a place like the USA, the great champion of democracy, got itself involved in these sort of enhanced, what do we call them?
Interrogation
of terror suspects, for instance. That's a good example, I think, where you put aside what you think are really high and important ideals because you're going to justify that because of the end point. You think, well, we can stop terrorism if we can do this. So we're prepared to do all these other things that might compromise our beliefs otherwise. That would be a good example. I mean, in the States now, you have people sitting at desks in Washington controlling drones over Pakistan that are launching missiles into places where we've seen in recent times where you might get a terror suspect with one of these missiles, but includes their whole family and their entourage and so on. There's not much outrage at that because this utilitarian thinking is that, you know, the end goal is worthy and therefore the way we get to it doesn't really matter.
So rather than saying is it right or wrong, we're saying does it work?
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
That's a good way to put it. Not, is it right or wrong? No, but it'll work, so we'll just deal with it.
So what are the limitations, do you say, that that confront this ethos?
I think it's a murky, complex ethical area. I can see there's good debates to be had around this, but in my mind it provides a pretty feeble moral framework within which to operate. And when we come back to our original topic, looking at sport and drugs and so on, it's not surprising to me that someone who's grown up with this type of thinking, where you know you do whatever it takes to get to your goal, would have very little kind of ethical foundation on which to resist something like the temptation of drugs. And it's not true of everyone. Some people resist it well, but in a sense, it's not surprising. Utilitarianism is so dominant that you can see why lots of sportsmen and women might say, well, I'm cheating, but the outcome will be I'm going to provide really well for my family. And so it's a noble outcome, and therefore it's okay.
It does seem that once you leave God out of the equation, things like happiness come to the fore. So what does Christianity have to say about utilitarianism?
Well, I think Christianity has a lot to offer in this discussion. I mean, it's important to say straight up that Christians aren't immune from utilitarian thinking. I've seen that in many places. I've seen it in myself. It's something that's hard to resist in lots of ways. But many religions, not just Christianity, but certainly Christianity is like this. It says that some things are just simply right or wrong, regardless of the consequences. And so Christianity would call you to act with great integrity, even though it might be costly for you. There's a personal cost sometimes in acting well. It might be in business, for instance, or another forum where you might say, no, this is the right thing to do, even though it's a hard thing to do. And so utilitarianism doesn't encourage you in those directions. Christianity, is, of course, also gives people a really solid basis on which to determine what's right and wrong. And it really ultimately stems from who God is and who we are as people before Him. And so without that basis, I suppose we're left to make it up on our own. And there are real questions for me around how well we can actually do that. We might be able to, but it leaves us with things that are really undefined. And in some ways, it's almost like the powerful people decide what's right. And I think you get into really troubled waters in that environment.
Absolutely. So, it is very easy, I think, to take on the whatever it takes kind of attitude that you've described. And, more and more so since it's so prevalent in our culture. So it's good to be reminded of the limits of utilitarianism and think of alternatives to that kind of thinking. Thanks, Simon.
Thanks, Justine.